song is called Make Me from the group Sierra. And before that, Shoom Away from Wiley Brooks Martin. And we're off and running on a Broken Road Radio Tuesday here, 9.5 minutes after the hour. And we're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don, a biochemist and member of the board at Creation Moments. And we're looking forward to talking about the world's largest critter today. Dr. Don, how you doing down there in Garden Valley, Texas?
Oh, doing fine. We've had bright sunny day.
Yeah.
That means a little bit more heat whenever the sun's out in full. And you limit your outside activities as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, we now have a winery, so we can go in and out of a cooler facility.
Well, now, how hot is hot down there in Garden Valley at this time?
I think it probably got up to about 94, 95.
Ooh, that's hot.
Yesterday.
Yeah. That's too hot for manual labor,
but
I say.
It could, in the past, it's been 100 degrees in September and first couple of weeks in October, so we're not complaining too badly
here. Well, we're spared of that here in East Dakota. I don't think we've seen 100 yet this year at all, and by now we won't. So we're looking at 47 degrees right now. We've turned fall this week, so it's going to stay cool. I think this is the downhill slide, David.
Are you saying that I should bring a jacket of some sort?
Yeah, that's right. Don is headed our way. He's going to come to Minnesota for a Creation Moments board meeting. Yeah, you should bring like a light jacket. And you'll help see temperatures in the 60s. There'll be some sunny days. I mean, fall is a gorgeous time here. It's not. I mean, the colors are not here yet. That'll be another 3-4 weeks. But it's going to be a good week, a pleasant week. And it might rain on you a little bit off and on. So be prepared for anything when you come north.
Yeah. Bring my snow boots and snowshoes. Eh?
One thing you won't have to worry about here are really large critters. We don't have them up in the Northland.
You don't have la cucarachas?
No, don't have any of those.
Nope.
Anything named Spanish stays away from here.
Cucarachas, yeah, we got those.
Cockroaches.
I'm talking about the tree cockroaches that are about 2 inches, 3 inches long, inches.
No. But here the cockroaches have winter coats. They're furry critters.
Yeah, they probably come inside to seek warmth up there.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what
happens. Cold outside.
They leave their coats outside. Yes, they do.
But I have not seen a flea. There are no termites. I mean, there are a lot of nasty things that just are very scarce up here, if you see them at all. So David's thinking now. He's trying to think if he's ever seen a termite. Have you ever seen a termite up here, David?
I've seen termites in Minneapolis and St. Cloud, which is our further south of
south
here.
Of here,
I don't think I've seen termites up in this neck of the woods.
And I have not seen a cockroach in 30 years here, so...
Oh, wow. Come on down to the Texas.
Yeah, I remember them from my days in Florida here, and I just assume not, thank you. Yeah, but
we've got all kinds of spiders and, you know, insects. I mean, it is.
You got poisonous snakes. You got big snakes down there. Boy.
We got turtles. Some places have alligators. I mean, you know, so it's a paradise down here.
Wild and woolly down there. Well, it's wild and woolly out west, too. And I'll tell you what, if you're walking through the woods in Oregon and you hear a noise and you turn around and you can't see anything, it might be because the critter that's stalking you is too big to see. It'd be pretty creepy, I think. And I'm looking at a picture. You can't get them all in one camera shot unless it's from high altitude, maybe. But I'm looking at a picture of him, and close up, he's pretty ugly. Brown and glistening looking, and little gills and stalks sticking out all over the place. Don, tell us about this, the world's largest critter. What is it really? And is it really one critter, or is it millions of them?
Oh, well, that's a good question.
That was the first thing I wondered.
It's a fungus. It's a big fungus, actually. It's a mushroom. It's called a honey mushroom, specifically, it's a Amaralia astoria, which is gigantic, it grows into a gigantic, not a gigantic mushroom, but the, you know, the mushrooms are normal size, but, but under the ground and in the trees that it's infecting.
Well, see, now you've called, you called it mushrooms. That's plural, but these are just parts of the same organism, according to biologists, huh?
Well, that's right, and they didn't know that until actually relatively recently, until the advent of being able to do DNA testing. Mm-hmm. And, for example, in this Oregon forest, there is a huge cluster of trees that have died and are on the periphery or, you know, kind of sick, and... So they tested the DNA of the fungus that was infecting them, and they found out that it was all part of the same organism. Mm-hmm. And they all had the same DNA, and they've now estimated, for example, the Gannet D is what they called, is about 2,000 to, I won't say 84. They estimate 8,650 years old, but 2.4 miles across.
Sounds
2.4 miles across, in inhabiting about 2,400 acres, or about 1,000 hectares, you know, of soil. And if you could dig it up and look at the fibrous mass, it'd probably you know, look like cotton. But if you could dig it up, it would only weigh between 7,500 to 35,000 tons.
Sounds
of fungus.
How come such a widespread in their guesses here? I mean, are these just wild guesses? Must be.
Yeah, they must be, because I don't know. You know, it's how do you know how deep this thing goes?
Mm-hmm.
And you can see what's happening on the surface, I suppose. It's interesting. It would have been fun to see an aerial photograph of the area that was affected by this, because it should be quite stunning, because you'd have area of dead trees. And of course, the closer you got to the center, the more dead the tree would be, I would suppose. Apparently, I mean, and it starts from just a little spore, you know, comes from the mushroom.
Mm-hmm.
And once it gets established, it starts affecting, you know, the trees around it, and slowly, and it must be extremely slow progressing. Killing the trees around it.
Doesn't part of it ever die? So, don't funguses just die of their own? I mean, don't they have a lifespan?
I'm not sure about that. Yeah. Apparently not, because. I mean, if you really date the age of this, I would put it at the time of the flood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there had to be, I mean, it probably, I would assume there was a lot of fungus around at the time of the flood, especially once the all the dead trees and dead vegetation was around. Mm-hmm. One of the fungus's job is to break down, you know, dead material. Not only alive material, but dead material, and to turn it back into nutrients so that other things, new trees, for example, could grow. And so that's, you know, that's one of the benefits of the fungus. But I would think that this particular one probably started back, back at the time of the flood.
Mm-hmm.
And has been there ever since. Now,
well, it says it survived several changes in climate and landscape from reading from the article here. By the way, there's a link to the article in our chat window now on brokenroadradio.com. Shrubby, sage lands, coniferous forests, alpine lakes and meadows. There have been different eras where it's all changed, but this thing has remained consistent there, apparently, through eons, 3,000-4,000 years anyway. And just huge, 2.4 miles across. That's covering more than 1,600 football fields. And they estimate the weight, again, up to as much as 35,000 tons of fungal structures. But I still have trouble believing this is a single organism. Now, if all parts of it have the same DNA, doesn't DNA reside in the human being, for example? Isn't there different DNA in different cells in different regions of the body, or is it all the same?
Well, you can take any cell in your body and get a complete copy of the DNA in you.
Okay.
Now, the difference, obviously, between a skin cell and, let's say, a heart cell is what genes are turned on and what genes are turned off.
Okay.
And that happens during differentiation from the fibroblast that, once the egg is fertilized, it doesn't take very long before the cells start differentiating from undifferentiated cells. But the copy of your DNA is in every cell.
Okay. So this is a big critter with different parts. I'm looking at the picture here, and some of these look like mushrooms you'd find in a store. Except I'm not sure that this is edible, or it would have been consumed by now by people walking through the woods. But there are different parts. There are stems, and there's the mushroom caps, and then it goes underground and becomes a large fibrous mass underground stretching across these 1,600 football fields. And this is just amazing. I'm still not convinced it's one critter, though.
Well, it's...
I think of like coral reefs.
It multiplies.
Yeah, I think of like coral reefs, but they're individual organisms that get together in a colony. And this article is maintaining that this is not a colony, but it's one large organism, and that's just astounding, really.
Well, it just keeps growing and growing and growing. I mean, it's not like us being one organism and just a huge just a huge creature, for example. But it is it's more plant-like, I guess, is a way to describe it than it is animal-like. Yeah,
there's another
obviously.
Question. You're a bio. I don't know if you've ever been a botanist, or you've probably done some study in botany, but. But is a fungus a plant or a separate category unto itself?
I think it's a separate category, but it is obviously on the plant side.
Fall under a plant, be a plant type.
The plant kingdom, and you got the animal kingdom. Mm-hmm. And so fungus would be probably in that area, but don't quote me on it, because it's been a long time since I've studied that particular classification. So it's just like a fungus will send out microcilia, little fibers into the area that it's is migrating into. And, sometimes it sends out a bigger, like a root-type structure when it's invading, a new area. And then the tiny little hairs, start growing out of that.
This is what would grow into the trees, for example, and then consume the nutrients from the tree.
Right. It grows in the ground or on top of the ground, kind of consuming the dead plant material as it goes, eventually it'll find a tree and start. It sounds like growing up, maybe in the bark of the tree or something, and then eventually into the wood of the tree. And of course, once it starts getting into the phloem and into the living tissue of the tree, then it's bad news for the tree. Eventually,
and of course, we're familiar.
It's a very slow process.
We're familiar here with other kinds of funguses that or fungi that destroy trees, and some of them are very colorful and actually kind of pretty. See bright orange and yellow fungus growing on birch trees around here, but nothing this massive. At least not this thing. If you were just to walk through, you would say, well, there's some mushrooms. You wouldn't realize it's part of a huge single organism and that it stretches underground for that kind of a distance. This is pretty impressive. I'm wondering, is this the only place such organisms exist? I mean, of this size? I mean, this one's been talked about before. I've heard about it before. I've not heard about the same thing anywhere else. Surely there must be others.
Well, one would think, you know, this because, you know, fungus can grow and cover a large area. It's probably because, you know, if none are known, or at least if none have been identified, it's probably because the research hasn't been done. Mm-hmm. You know, there's multiple fungus plays actually a very important role in our soil health, for example. And without it, we would have not many plants actually growing, or trees. So it does serve a benefit. And it serves a benefit in multiple ways, for example. First of all, obviously, it breaks down the main reason for the fungus in the first place is to break down dead material. So if you've got, you know, leaves that fall off of trees and dead grasses and stuff, then it takes that that cellular material and breaks it down and then puts nutrients back into the soil. So without the fungus, you wouldn't be able to, you know, a new tree, for example, or even you know, just a plant wouldn't have very much to eat. When it finishes the nutrients in an area, then it would wind up dying because the nutrients aren't being replenished. But fungus plays a very important role in replenishing the nutrients, in the soil. Mm-hmm. The other thing that it does, because it has these microfibers, that it provides structure to the soil, and it also helps to maintain, for example, helps the soil to carry moisture. So if you had the exact same soil structure, for example, you had one that didn't have the fungus and you had another one that did have fungus, then the one that didn't have the fungus wouldn't be very permeable to water. And if it finally, you know, water got absorbed, it would hold much less water than the soil that has the fungus, which would be much more open and much more airy. It would allow, you know, more air to permeate the soil and obviously hold a lot more water than without the fungus. So, mm-hmm. you know, these funguses do provide quite a bit of benefit to our ecosystem, and it's all part of the balance. And so, you know, we look at, obviously, there, you know, mushrooms of various types. Some are poisonous, some are not. But when you see the mushroom, it's only a very small part, obviously, as this article demonstrates. It's only a very small part of the structure that's underneath the earth.
Interesting and telltale paragraph in the article, and I'll just read it to you. It says, but unlike your body, it does not have a central control system, a lifespan, or a typical size and shape. There is no heart for fungi, no brain, and no childhood. Unless something like a forest fire hot enough to kill soil organisms intervenes, this giant being can just continue to grow indefinitely. I think this is an alien life form, Don. I think it was brought here by the Yeti who feed on these and live in the Oregon woods.
You know, I have a question. Generally speaking, about mushrooms, do all of them have this this structure underground?
Yes, they all do.
Oh, really?
Of some sort. I mean,
of some sort.
Whether it's this extensive, obviously. You know, it wouldn't be otherwise. If one fungus infected your ground, you'd have a huge area that would be destroyed. So most of them, you know, don't grow to be this size. But wherever you see mushrooms, you can suspect that there is a pretty big fungal infection around it. And we've seen, rings of mushrooms. Well, that would kind of indicate that if you've got a ring of mushrooms, then that's the area probably that the underground network, is forming, and the mushrooms are kind of at the peripheral of the structure. Mm. Trying to create more spores that then can infect different areas. They're rather fascinating, but it's absolutely necessary for our biosystem, especially the soil biosystem. And of course, what happens in the soil is going to happen, the plants that are able to grow from it, and of course the plants and the animals that eat the plants, and we that eat the plants, and or the animals that eat the plants. So it's all part of the ecosystem. Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if it even meets the definition of life here. And I just did some quick Googling. I wound up on the Wikipedia page, and it says the definition of life is controversial. The current definition, and then it says according to whom, they don't know, is that organisms maintain homeostasis. That means what, Don? Homeostasis.
Well, homeo meaning the same, and mm-hmm. stasis meaning kind of movement or static.
Okay.
So they can things are kind of static, like with your cell, for example. Okay. Things are happening in your cell,
mm-hmm.
Everything is in balance in it. That is,
it's that balance is a good word, and it says that to be alive, it's got to be composed of cells, undergo metabolism, they can grow, adapt to their environment, living things can respond to stimuli, and reproduce. However, this is interesting, many other biological definitions have been proposed, and there are also some borderline cases, such as viruses. Biophysicists have also proposed some definitions, many being based on chemical systems, and there are some living systems theories, such as the Gaia hypothesis, G-A-I-A, the idea that the Earth is alive. Well, it depends on how you
define the Earth. Certainly the surface of the Earth has got a lot of living things in it. But to say that the soil itself is alive, an inanimate object is alive, is of course going a bit too far. And we've had movies obviously Avatar was one that the whole planet, for example, was a big organism, and whatever happened to one life affected the rest of the living organisms.
Well, of course, all that says it is a system of lives. That much we can agree to, I think. But it's interesting to think that this thing, this fungus, not fungi, but fungus, is so big that you really can't see it. You can't take it in, and you wouldn't recognize it as a being, as a living thing, because it is, partly so big. I mean, how many other things out there are too big for us to see, do you suppose? I mean, there's a lot of things we don't know about.
Yeah, if you're looking, it's like kind of going into a big, gigantic forest, hearing a tree limb, or seeing a tree limb fall. But in other parts of the forest, you wouldn't even know that the tree limb has fallen or the tree has fallen, mm-hmm. right? So it's all perspective, and that's why it would have been it would be interesting, to take an aerial view of this organism, from the air, because you certainly would be able to see the dead trees in that area. And apparently, though, fortunately, there's not a lot of these huge ones in this particular forest. And so it turns out to be just a very, very small percentage of the whole forest.
Hmm.
And, you know, so I think they mentioned in the article one thing that probably could kill the fungus, which would be a forest fire, which would, you know, come in and probably, you know, wipe out, certainly wipe out the structure that is on top of the soil. Mm-hmm. But I'm not even sure a forest fire would actually wind up killing the whole fungus because of the massive, you know, underground structure. So, yeah, this very interesting thing. We wouldn't necessarily think of a fungus growing to this size. But, like I said, even in agriculture, you know, we put down, one beneficial thing you can do is actually put down beneficial fungus on your soil and get that into the ground to help release nutrients, you know, in your, mm-hmm. in your soil to help, help with the plants that you're trying to grow.
Now, is mold something else? Is that something other than a fungus?
A mold is like a fungus, and I think the category is fungi, and molds and fungus are part of the larger, you know, the larger class, if you will. I don't know what the designation would be, but
I looked that up on Wikipedia just a couple of minutes ago. I'm not boasting that I have prior knowledge of this, but it says in here that fungi is a kingdom. And as opposed to kingdoms of plants and animals.
So it's a kingdom of its own then.
Yeah, it's a kingdom of its own. It's a separate organism. Now, I just looked at mold, and I didn't have a chance to look any further deeply or into it. Mold is a fungus that grows in the form of multicellular filaments called hyphae.
Okay.
And so, so mold is in the category of fungi. It's probably in the kingdom. It's probably like a prince or something.
So plant, yeah, probably plants, animals, and a whole separate family. I told you they were alien.
Well, they're separate families.
They don't belong here.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, they're slowly.
They probably think the same of you.
Well, that's just it. But I'm quicker than they are. But they're slowly. The point is, they're slowly consuming all of us, David. Mm-hmm. And they're all around.
Mm-hmm. We do have fungus growing on us.
Yeah, I think there's a movie in this somewhere, I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mold is multicellular. In contrast, fungi can adopt a single cell growth. Mm-hmm. And yeast is a fungi.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Or fungus, rather. Yeah.
All right.
So molds are large and taxonomically diverse. And fungal species. So it's fungus is the big category, and then mold is one of the subsections.
Okay. Well, we learned something today. Then I didn't realize there was really a third family of being there. Interesting article. The publication is, in fact, this is the last edition of the publication. That's now going to be published, maybe with a different name, under the auspices of Christianity Today. This is the last edition of the Behemoth magazine, and the headline is The Biggest Behemoth. Again, there's a link to the article in the chat window on Broken Road Radio. Something else that is over there at BrokenRoadRadio.com is a link to Creation Moments, and that organization based in Minnesota, and it exists really for the purpose of disseminating the science, the knowledge of young earth creationism. And it's a fascinating website with lots of good resources for your church and Bible studies and small groups and scientific discussions, because there really is valid science that says it's a young earth and there is a creator. And you can check it out, too, by just going there. You can click on that Creation Moments icon over on the right-hand side of the homepage. It'll take you to creationmoments.com, and you can take a look around. I think you'll find it an enriching sort of website.
Before we run off, where does a virus fall in, Don?
Well, it's a different classification as well. Now, the viruses are quite interesting, because if you just take them as themselves, they have absolutely no ability to multiply without infecting something. And so some of them are called retroviruses, because they actually don't have DNA. They have a single strand of RNA, And the first thing when a virus, bores a hole in the cell wall, for example, to get inside the cell that it's trying to infect, the first thing that it does, it injects the RNA. And then the RNA starts making, like other RNAs within your body, the RNA starts making copies of proteins, and eventually it can actually make a copy of a DNA that is required to make the virus. So viruses are very, very interesting in themselves. But essentially, all a virus is it's either a single strand of RNA or it's a single strand of DNA coated by protein and having a little bit of functionality in order to infect its host. And there's all different types of viruses. Of course, there's bacterial viruses.
No, wait a second. I was just going to ask you, is there a difference between a virus and a bacteria? But there are viral bacterias now. Is that like a hybrid?
There are viruses that infect bacteria.
No.
Just like there are viruses that infect our cells, pneumonia and various other things. But there are viruses the only thing that they do is they basically take over the machinery of the cell to make more viruses. And so they turn off the function of the cell, for example, to make more of the cell, and use it to make proteins and other RNAs. Mm-hmm. If it's a retrovirus, for example,
amazing
so
stuff
that,
here.
You can make you can make more viruses. Mm-hmm. So that's. Those are pretty interesting themselves.
Well, I have this urge to go wash my hands now. I think I'm going to do that. Dr. Don Clark, member of the Board of Creation Moments, a biochemist, and he's a good friend of the station, and he's the only biochemist on the staff here, so we treasure his time every Tuesday morning. Don, we'll turn you loose to the wine ranch. You can do your daily duties down there, and we'll talk to you again next Tuesday, okay?
All right. Sounds very good, and you folks have a great week.
Thank you for your expertise.
You as well,
sir.
Don.
Take care. Bye-bye.